Hey, what's going on? This is the Educated Guest Podcast, and I'm Justin, your host. Hey, if this is your first time joining, I just want to say thank you for joining what is a virtual art school. And as part of this art school, there's many different components, many different objectives one might have or ideas one might have about what we're trying to do, but I'll be very clear about what it is we're trying to do. We're trying to help the next generation, and to some degree, the current generation of multidisciplinary artists achieve things that they've always wanted to. And one might say, oh, well, that's broad. Well, that's how you're gonna do all that. Well, there's three key ways we're trying to do that. The first is by helping people to develop a better mindset about how they approach their work. The second thing we're trying to do is to help people develop the tactics, the tools, and a knowledge of practicality and the practical way of going about achieving the things they want to do and getting their work up to par to what they see on a daily basis and what they see in their head. And then the third and final thing we're trying to do is to provide a source of inspiration that's outside of the normal realm of algorithmically reinforced imagery that people are seeing every day and stories people are hearing every day and conversations people are taking part in every single day. So that's our very three-part approach to pedagogy, if you will, pedagogical approach to how we run this art school. And we think that the well over 100-something-odd episodes at this point that we've provided and 100-some-odd lectures we provided both independently and with guests are good evidence of the positive impact that we are having and the positive impact we'll continue to have. Like, we're changing the way art education is delivered and can be delivered, and we're excited about that, and we welcome you to this community. If you're interested in more, go to educated-guest.com to become more of a part of our community by subscribing to our newsletter. So subscribe there, and you can follow us on Instagram at educated_guests. Cool. So with that brief advertisement out of the way, I just want to say thank you again. Today's episode and today's lecture is about providing inspiration. So you remember the three pillars that I mentioned. Well, today is our segment called Well Read. And in this segment, we try to do one of two things. Either it's a dialogue or a monologue, depending on, you know, if we're able to bring someone on and provide sort of a guest lecture like we've done in the past, or you'll hear directly from me. So it's a monologue or dialogue focused on either a psychographic or biographic offering of an inspirational person's story. So that's a very long-winded way of saying we bring you interesting people to hear from or to learn about, and we hope that you can take our little, you know, 30 minute to 60 minute lecture and go forth and conquer and integrate them into your daily practice and daily referential schedule of people you're looking at. So the idea here is to reset your personal algorithm for who you're looking at and who you're looking to for inspiration and for encouragement and for motivation to continue doing what you're doing, in hopes that you might understand that there are more idiosyncratic, almost edge dweller type people than just you sitting out there. So you don't have to worry that you're the only person out there doing what it is you're trying to do. Today we want to focus on one of my personal artistic heroes. Yeah, I pause there because I want to be very careful about using the word hero or idol or any of these almost. I want to be very careful of that for many different reasons, but I would call this guy a hero of mine mainly because of the ethos he seems to live by. And I know nothing about his personal story. Never met the guy, never talked to him directly. Never actually knew about him until I was much older. You know, it took me some years before I figured out, oh, like, that's the guy. And I think that's a lot of the spirit that I'm hoping to share with everyone here, is the spirit of, oh man, all this time I could have just been looking at that person, because I was looking for, you know, in the world of music, everybody's like, I was looking for a Drake type beat or whatever. But if you actually figure out who the producer, if you actually figure out that, oh, like, that's 40, that's Boy Wonder, that's T-Minus, like, that's them. Okay, I don't have to look for a Drake type beat. I just look for stuff produced by T-Minus, Boy Wonder, or 40. And I know there's many more producers at OVO or whatever, but you know, that's like a primary staff, if you will, from the early days. So today we're not talking about OVO, we're talking about Lee Clow. And Lee Clow is probably one of the most influential people in my personal design style, mainly I think for his simplicity, for his very, I would call it, countercultural approach to art and design. Countercultural because very literally his story marks a counter to the cultural dominant way of doing advertising at the time. And having grown up in Southern California, he was, you know, adopted, and he tells the story. If you go and research his own interviews and look at his stories and stuff like that, his biographies that have been published in a much more eloquent way than what I'm just sharing with you briefly today. But Lee Clow is mostly known for his work with Apple. So I'll just start there. So you might be like, who is this guy? So he kind of came into prominence in the public eye via his involvement with the 1984 commercial for Apple. And for anyone involved in advertising, marketing, branding, what have you, you also know about the Think Different campaign. So he's also responsible for that. And obviously there's plenty more people at the table, plenty of people involved in the room. There's, you know, account managers and, you know, all these different people, all these different roles at an ad agency. So I definitely want to be respectful of the other people at the table. But today I want to highlight Lee Clow specifically for his sort of thought leadership in perpetuity since the days of 1984 and bringing back the Think Different campaign in the late 90s when Steve Jobs came back. So his parents, I found this ironic when I was doing some research, just to like figure out a composite story to bring to you all today. But his parents actually encouraged his creativity. You know, he speaks often about his mom being someone who championed the type of creativity that existed in its very, very infant form of, you know, painting a sailboat or painting a boat. And he always, you know, jokingly refers to it as like, I was able to paint a boat and make the smoke go the right way. You know, the boat goes this way, the smoke goes the opposite way. And oh God, like the kid's an artist. Like, it's kind of funny the way he talks about it. And he also makes mention of his dad saying that, hey, I wasn't really supported in the way by my dad, mostly out of sort of the times, right? Like at the time, this is, you know, arguably the 60s, I would say 60s, 70s, around that time period. I don't know. I know he's like 75 years old now. So do the math on that. Yeah, he's around the 60s in the late 50s, if you will, when he's kind of coming of age. And I say all this because no disrespect to his dad, those two perspectives are important. To have a perspective that understands the need for practicality, the need for, all right, well, you know, how is this going to make money? What is the business behind this? How are you going to support yourself and a family? And I used to be very against that sort of mentality because I was very free flowing and, you know, very, what's the word? I was very existentialist. And I think everyone sort of has an existentialist period in their life. And to some degree, I still am that. Like, I'm still in my personal design ethos and in my personal work ethos and my artistry. And every project that I take on, there's still a sense of rebellion that exists as an undertone. There's a sense of wanting to do things differently, not for the sake of, you know, becoming a caricature of the thing I don't like, but for the sake of saying, I don't want to be a part of that. And I'm just going to recognize that that's over there and we would like to be over here. And being raised in Southern California, you know, Lee Clow had a very similar mentality, which I agree with. And he actually didn't study at Art Center. I think this was an important distinction in his story that I found, is that he wasn't one who sort of had this upbringing where you could afford, and granted, factoring in inflation, you know, it wasn't $60,000 a year to go to Art Center at the time. You know, it was probably more like 10 grand or whatever it was. But in the 60s, 70s, you know, to go to Art Center still, like, that was an incredible pathway into a career in advertising and design. Regardless of what type of design you wanted to practice, it was a great pathway. And instead, he went to Santa Monica City College and Cal State University. So I found it very interesting that he sort of had this circuitous approach and this roundabout way of getting to a place where you could deliver copy, deliver ad material, deliver, you know, visual stimulating images to a degree that is memorable beyond generations. Like, there's people who weren't even born, and I'm very close to being in that number. It's like, there are people who weren't even born when the Think Different campaign was launched. And that's one of my favorite campaigns, period, to ever reference. You know, that's like the earliest version of like a Jown mood board. You know, like that was a time when you would look up and you see a billboard of some, I don't know how you get these images, like some super proprietary images that no one's seen before of Nelson Mandela, of John Lennon, of I think the one that's most interesting to me is the Salvador Dali one. And it's like, how do you get these images of these people? And then you just put Think Different on there and you recognize that there is a through line. And I think the most beautiful part about Lee Clow and his approach, and the reason why Shayad Day, the company he was eventually CEO and chief and global chairman of, and chief creative officer, I think he's rotated between one of those three roles at any given point. That's the reason why Shayad Day was the agency of record at Apple as long as Steve Jobs was there. Because the same thing people love about Steve Jobs, this one, at the time, very small ad agency of Shayad Day was remarkably focused in a similar way on the intuitive approach to generating brand awareness, the intuitive approach to doing advertising, the elegant approach to delivering delight in every facet. And they understood this pretense that everything a brand does is advertising. And that's something that, you know, I've always appreciated about anyone I admire. And a lot of the ethos around this virtual art school we're building is that, you know, we admire the type of advertising, the type of marketing, the type of design approach that isn't necessarily account management driven, you know, that isn't driven by business objectives in totality. But as, you know, many people have probably quoted, but Lee Clow in particular is quoted as saying that, you know, the art comes first, the work comes first. You know, that's very simply what it means. That's how we do it differently. And if you go research, you know, some old Shayad Day ads, you'll find some of the work that shows, you know, their almost manifesto in a print, in a poster. And you'll read through the things, like, I want to say probably a paragraph worth, but on the poster it shows up as like 15, 20 lines or something like that. But it's really only like five or six sentences now that I think about it. And what they just describe simply why they're different. And it's like the anti-ad agency ad. And that's what I love about it, because I think there's going to be a return to that. There's going to be a return to this sort of post-advertising approach to doing work. And yes, and I've talked about it with a lot of friends, a lot of collaborators, that, you know, yes, it's going to mean that you're going to lose more work than some businesses. But at the same time, it's going to mean that you build a deeper legacy. You build a deeper appreciation for all the work that you do accept and for the people who do accept you. So, you know, we've been talking together, and I know it's just me talking to you and just long monologue, but, you know, I kind of understand that I'm talking to thousands of people every single week. So with that comes a responsibility to offer you to talk back, you know, extend an offer to return this conversation to me and to the team, and to, you know, actually generate a genuine discussion around how to find more people who are worthy of looking at, who have a similar ethos as someone like Lee Clow. And I think when you start looking at his story in particular, you know, what you end up doing is realizing that there are plenty of people who are edge dwellers. There are plenty of people who don't fit, who are the square pegs in the round holes. which ironically, that ad from, you know, people mostly remember it from the Steve Jobs movie, the first one with Ashton Kutcher, where Steve Jobs, who didn't actually read the real ad because he said, I don't want to run the ad with me talking about it. I don't want to run the ad with me saying, like, here's to the crazy ones. That's the thing I'm talking about. He said that, hey, I don't want people to think this is about me. I want people to think, I don't want people to know it's about Apple. And this, if they think it's about me, this will ruin everything we've been doing. So again, you know, those little small details, that whole script was written by Lee Clow. And there's stories and stories upon stories of, you know, him writing and rewriting it and writing and rewriting and writing and rewriting it into the depths of the night, trying to get it perfect. And arguably that one campaign saved Apple the time it needed and gave Apple the time it needed to actually develop a product catalog that would catapult them into being the most valuable company for a number of years in the world. And I would argue that as you seek out more people, you know, many people know Johnny Ive, many people know Steve Jobs, many people know Steve Wozniak, many people, like the whole Apple camp, it's important to start digging deeper into, you know, the people who are around. And you'll realize the more that you go deeper into the realms of understanding, you'll realize the ethos that existed and why all these people collaborated consistently and didn't waver from having these long-term partnerships. And you'll start to understand that as you're building your studio, as you're building your practice, as you're building your art form, you'll start to value long-term partnerships more than anything else. And you will say no to some things if it means you jeopardize a long-term partnership that matters. So I would argue that there's many, many things to learn from Lee Clow. And he has plenty of interviews to go and research and look at, and you just get a feel for the type of energy that surrounds him, the energy he emanates, and why he is that way. So go and check that out, as well as Jay Shiat, Guy Day, and I think you will learn a ton about things that might catapult you into a new type of future for yourself. That said, that's all we have today. Talk soon. Peace.